I want to use everything in my life for the glory of God, for the progress of his gospel, to love him and to love my neighbour and to honour Jesus. And so it's worth asking the question of every piece of technology in our life, okay, how can I use that? How can I redeem it, even if its inventors wanted something different from it? Can I redeem it to be put to God's purposes?
Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name is Adrian Reynolds, Head of National Ministries of the FIEC, and I'm joined today by Nathan Weston again to talk about technology. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Nathan, you're the Associate Minister at Moorlands Church in Lancaster.
That's right.
So it's great that you're with us by using technology.
Indeed.
Not only is technology being used to record this podcast, however you are and wherever you're listening, you are using technology to listen in. So technology is good, right? Technology is a helpful thing and we can make use of it. Right, that's the end of the podcast. And thank you for joining us. Look forward to seeing you again soon. Nathan, you and I both love technology, but you got interested in thinking about this subject. For what reason? What got you really thinking about Christians and their use of technology?
Yeah, well, I have a little bit of a background in it. I did a PhD in computer science many, many years ago. And so
I should be calling you Dr. Weston, sorry.
If you would, please, Professor Adrian.
Yes, that's right.
Please don't do that. I had an interest in it. I was sort of enmeshed in digital technology and programming and all the rest of it. But I'd always been slightly uneasy, I think, about my own use of technology. I know that I'm as prone as anybody else, and probably more so, to sort of waste time and to use it badly. But it was brought home to me a few years ago when this was just the beginning of the COVID lockdown, I think, when my middle child, my son Isaac, who was quite young at the time, said to me, "Daddy, do all adults look at screens all day?" And that hurt. That was very, very painful.
You could have just said yes.
Yes. I'm perfectly normal.
Yes. Yeah.
No, but that's the kind of the moment where you think, oh, this isn't really very good. I was very dissatisfied, I think, with my own use. I still am, I think, with my own use of digital technology, with screens, with phones and things. And I was aware that I wasn't using them particularly for God's glory. I don't think I was using for nefarious evil purposes all the time, but I wasn't happy with the way I was using technology. And I think technology is so ubiquitous and so sort of, and we're so enmeshed in it in our entire way of life. A lot of it is just mediated through highly advanced technology. A lot of people's lives is simply mediated through screens most of the day. And as Christians, it's right for us to take a step back and think, what are we doing? I mean, is this right? Is this how we should be living? Is Christ pleased with the way I'm using technology? But because it's the air we breathe, very often we don't stop and ask those questions. You know, there's that famous passage in Isaiah 44 where the famous critique of idolatry, where the chap knocks down a tree and uses half of it to bake his bread and half of it to bow down and make it into an idol and bow down to it. And Isaiah's critique is no one stops to think. And so that question from my son made me stop and think.
Now, if you haven't listened to the first podcast we've recorded on technology, do listen to that. But worth just saying here, we're not just talking about smartphones. This is a slightly broader topic. But that, frankly, is the way that technology manifests itself majorly in most of our lives, doesn't it? Mm.
Yes, absolutely. I think that is the one, I suppose, that is what everybody is talking about. That's what I think lots of people who aren't Christians in our world are talking about, the ubiquity of always online, always available, and there's an app for that kind of culture, I think has been profoundly shaping in our world over the last, let's say, 15 years. And I think that is, when people talk about technology, I think rightly we zero in on that as sort of, okay, that is the sort of crux of where the challenges are for how we live well is mediated through smartphones, social media, internet, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So let's think about this in church life. You and I are both pastors. Mm-hmm. So we want the flock of Jesus Christ to flourish, to live in a way that is honouring to Christ, pleasing to him. We want to be able to help people as adults in our churches. We want to be able to help parents in our churches navigate some of this kind of very tricky territory, really. But let's just step back from that a moment and start with ourselves as pastors. We need to watch our own hearts, don't we? We need to guard our own hearts. And that's kind of your testimony. I've been through similar sort of circumstances as you think about how you use technology. I'm not on social media the way I used to be, for example, because I realised the damage it was doing to my heart. So let's think about ourselves as leaders. How do we as leaders wrestle with it? You know, often people are not speaking into our situation. You know, we're doing the preaching, not necessarily sitting under the preaching. So what sorts of things as leaders do we need to be aware of when it comes to technology?
And this is so important. And I think this is the way that we can lead our people best, isn't it? By modeling a life well lived for Jesus. That is the most important thing we can do aside from teaching the scriptures. And I think it's just about asking the right questions of your own use of technology. I often like to think about it sort of on a spectrum. So if you imagine a spectrum where at one end you've got the word receive. So again, 1 Timothy 4, nothing is to be rejected if it's received with thanksgiving. So think through perhaps some of the technologies that you're living with day to day and give thanks for them. Give thanks for the kettle that means that you can make someone a cup of tea when they come around. Give thanks for the car. I'm not in the habit of stopping and thanking God for stuff that I use every day, which is awful, isn't it? And so just as we thank God for our daily bread, let's give thanks for our daily bread maker. Let's give thanks for our technology. On the other end of the spectrum,
was it someone? Sorry, I've got to tell this story because it's one of my favorites. Sure. Didn't someone? I think someone once criticized G.K. Chesterton for not saying grace before a meal. And he said, "You say grace before food. I say grace for my train journey and my car ride and my," and then he sort of listed all these things that he was thankful for. And it was a stupid story, but it's true, isn't it?
You know, that's true.
Christians, we're very regimented about thanking God for food.
Yes,
but well, so just, much else and also that we don't thank God for.
We're profoundly ungrateful people, Jim.
Yeah,
and so that is actually bread of our hearts, but also bread of our world that teaches us to be dissatisfied by showing us brand new things every week and saying, your phone's rubbish, get this one instead. And so ingratitude is bred into us by our culture. And so habits of gratitude are really important.
And interestingly, when you get to Philippians 4, you discover that worrying and anxiety are very closely linked to your attitude to thankfulness.
Absolutely.
I think that's extraordinarily profound as we wrestle with just the nervousness of the world.
Absolutely.
Actually, if we want to be free from those kinds of worries that we're told we ought to be free of, thankfulness is part of the antidote, isn't it? It's part
very
of the
important,
solution to that.
Very important, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, remembering what we deserve and remembering what we've been given is really key.
Yeah.
So gratitude on one hand, receiving things with thanksgiving. On the other end of the spectrum, there might be some, is the word reject. So there may well be some technologies that you think, okay, I've really just got to say no. And I think I would encourage people to be quite radical about that. There's lots of things that our culture would tell us that we need. You know, we need to be on social media because that's where people are, or we need to have the latest whatever. Or as churches, we need to invest in this particular live streaming technology or whatever it is. And we need to take a step back from that and say, well, we might not say a blanket no to all people using those things, you know what I mean? But we as individuals first and then perhaps as churches later have to say, well, for me right now, in my walk with the Lord, what things do I need to say no to? And for me, as with you, Adrian, I've said no to social media. I'm an investor time waster. I'm way too interested in what other people think of me. And I just think it's just not going to work. It's not helpful for me.
So let me just ask you about that, because my story is, I guess, slightly similar. I think as I've got older, as a Christian, I'm more able to be honest with myself, which I think is probably, I hope, a mark of spiritual maturity. I think that the besetting ministry sin I've really wrestled with, as many people in ministry, is people pleasing. I know I've got friends who are thick skinned, don't care what anybody says about them. That's not me. Yeah. And I think someone once said to me, probably best to err on the side that you do rather than anyone else. But I want to be more sanctified. So I know I need to wrestle with people pleasing. And therefore, for me, Twitter is a really dangerous place.
Yeah.
But is that true for Bob, who's sitting next to me, who doesn't have that besetting
sin?
Does it become personal at that point?
I think so. I don't want to bind people's consciences, and I don't want to make people take the decisions, discipleship decisions that I've made, because they might be different people, different opportunities. I can imagine somebody using social media brilliantly with real grace and skill for God's purposes. Our church has a couple of social media accounts that we use sparingly, but we used to invite people to church, or, you know, I'm not going to say you shouldn't do this. I'm just going to say we've got to ask the question. And particularly we've got to ask the question in a culture that says to us that the way to live, the story that social media is telling is, put yourself out there, make as many connections as you can, and create as much content as you can in order to reach lots of people. Now, instinctively, as gospel missional minded people, they think, oh yeah, that sounds great. Let's get some content. Let's make lots of connections, and let's just blitz social media. And I think a individual or a church could go for that approach, well and in a godly fashion. So don't hear me say anything else, but it must be said that creating a culture that is Christ-centered and cross-shaped and really attractive and appealing to someone is not the same thing as creating lots of content and lots of connections. And that is what the social media companies want us to do, because that's their business model. But it might not be the best thing for us to lean into as individuals or as churches.
So don't mistake views for real connections.
Correct.
They might be connected in some way, but they are not the same thing.
They're not the same thing. Yeah. And they might be linked and they might be helpful. But you see it, I think. People are craving real community. People are craving deep relationships. People are craving, I think, a slower pace of life. But because everyone else is living a fast pace of life, you feel you have to jump on the train and move with the times. And I just think as Christians, we need to say, well, that's not what we're for. That's not what we need. What we need is rich, deep relationships in meaningful community. And social media might be a helpful thing to that, or it might be just not really necessary for me as an individual or us as a church to lean into. And therefore, we can say, well, we're going to invest our time and our effort and our resources somewhere else. In addition to the fact that you might just say, this isn't just very helpful for me. I'm a naturally people-pleasing person.
Yeah.
So back to the spectrum. Go on, Adrian.
An honest assessment of our heart is actually important for battling any sin.
Absolutely.
And it's important for sanctification in any area of life. Mm-hmm. But including as we think about technology, it needs to be more subtle, doesn't it, than electricity bad, wind powered good. Actually, it's about our hearts. It's about examining our hearts, and actually for the whole of ministry and all the sins we're wrestling with, thinking about an honest assessment of our hearts and the ability to be able to say to the Lord, maybe with the help of others, mm-hmm. help me understand my heart. Help me see what my motives are. That's key to sanctification in all areas of life.
Absolutely. Understanding of the heart. And I think there's something to be said for building in habits and rhythms of limitedness and dependence, and deliberately seeking those moments where we have to live a slower paced life, where we can't do everything we want to do, where we, you know, something as simple as putting your phone away and going for a long walk with close friends or family, that those kind of things to train our hearts, to train our habits, train our attention to walk in the ways of the Lord, I think are really important.
So I'm not a Sabbatarian, for example, mm-hmm. but particularly in a very strict way, but I think mm-hmm. the rhythm of the Sabbath is absolutely essential to life.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't just apply to what work you might or might not do. Actually, it applies to all kinds of things, doesn't it?
We live in a very, very restless world. And that is one of the difficulties of the digital age and the difficulties of the ubiquity of things like smartphones. I can be halfway up a mountain with my family on holiday and checking my work emails. I can do that. And actually, that is not abnormal in our world. No. But I think that isn't great in terms of rhythms of work and rest. The thing is about always on, always online, is that our work can bleed into our rest and our rest can bleed into our work. So as we're sitting at a screen, we're doing our work, but we're also, checking our social media. We're also browsing YouTube. We're also watching the county cricket coverage that might just be me. On you know,
I was born in Essex, so don't start on cricket. Oh, you know,
I'm doing well this
season. I beat you every time.
Yeah, Lancashire not doing so well. Anyway, our leisure and entertainment can bleed into our work and make our work dissatisfying and frustrating, and we feel annoyed at ourselves. And then in the evening, our work can then bleed back into our rest, or in the weekends or whatever it is. And so you never really work very well. And so you never really rest very well. And all our patterns are out of joint. And so I just think, it's worth just thinking about that. What are my patterns of work and rest? What do I need to say, not just perhaps a blanket no to, but a no to at certain times? Do I need to, for my work hours, block internet access? Do I need to just say no to... in the evening times, putting my mobile phone, turning it off and putting it away so I can spend time with my family. Mm. And so it's got to be a bit more nuanced than yes or no, but there has to be a question about that.
Yeah. Something I found very useful, I don't know if other people might find this helpful or not, is that some of the controls that are now built into smart devices for parents, we'll come on to talk about parents a bit later, but some of the controls that are there to help parents control their devices for children, I found very helpful.
Absolutely.
I let my wife use those for me, turning things off at certain times, restricting access. I find that really helpful.
Absolutely, me too. And that brings to the sort of middle of the spectrum. Remember, we had received with Thanksgiving on one end and reject on the other. I think most technologies fall in the middle, where the R word is redeem. In that I want to use everything in my life for the glory of God, for the progress of his gospel, to love him and to love my neighbor and to honor Jesus. And so it's worth asking the question of every piece of technology in our life. Okay, how can I use that? How can I redeem it? Even if its inventors wanted something different from it, can I redeem it to be put to God's purposes? So, and sometimes it's easier or harder to do that. So the invention of the smartphone, most apps and most use of that want my attention all the time. They want me to look at it. There's notifications all the time. The software and the designers of the software want my attention. Well, I want to give my attention to the Lord and his word and his people. At least I do in my saner moments. Mm-hmm. And so how can I redeem, reconfigure, remodel my technology that I can do that better, and to be quite ruthless with that? So that's where it's a double-edged sword, that actually the configurability of a smartphone is a blessing, in that this is just me, I'm not, again, not binding anyone's conscience, but the way I use my smartphone is I've completely I've completely disabled most of it. It doesn't have a browser at all. It doesn't have any sort of time distracting apps. It's in black and white, and I mostly don't have it on me. I've just got like Google Maps and parking apps, because you can't pay anymore with cold hard cash. And you know, I have a podcast player on there. So even that I don't use as much as I used to, mainly because I found that anytime I was walking somewhere, I'd listen to a podcast, or anytime I was doing something, and I just found the constant input and the constant stimulus, even though it's fairly wholesome stuff, sometimes even the Independence podcast, was just a sort of constant constant stimulus to my mind.
Yeah, yes.
And I never had time to sort of think or pray. Yeah. And I just think my walk to church is about half an hour. So if I'm walking to church, either to go to the office or Sunday morning, I never have my headphones in. So I think, well, there's a perfect opportunity to limit myself to thinking and praying.
Yeah.
And so making your devices work for the Lord and for his purposes, rather than looking to them to give purpose and meaning to your life, because that's what they will do. Yeah. If you get your phone and you turn it on, and it will give you something to do. It will set the agenda for you.
So we end up being discipled by our devices if we're not clear about that. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, so there's been various people writing on this. I think Samuel James's book, Digital Liturgies, is really helpful, because it shows us that what the designers of the social internet want from us, how they want to disciple us, how they want us to live the liturgies that they would love us to live, and how different that is from the vision of human flourishing that we get in the scriptures. And that doesn't mean you never use them. I still have a smartphone. I'm less and less convinced I need one, but I still have one. But I'm trying to make it work for me, and therefore work for the Lord and his purposes rather than me working for it.
Let's talk a little bit about how we, we're slightly running out of time, so we'll have to, we'll just speed up a little bit, I guess.
Yep.
How do we pastor the flock when it comes to technology? I think what you're saying, and I can agree with that, is that we can't simply, sort of make blanket assumptions about people or about technology. You know, we're talking about not wanting to bind other people's consciences. Clearly, there are some things that are wrong. You know, the use of pornography, for example. You know, we've got a clear category to put those in. But there are a lot of things where we don't want to bind people's consciences, but yet we do want to equip people in the church to live well. I think you were beginning to hint at it, actually, because you were setting out a better vision for community and, you know, an environment of love and care and compassion between people, and thinking about how we use technology to foster that. So there's something going on there. We need a better vision, basically, don't we? Rather than just saying, don't do this, don't do that.
Absolutely. And I think the good news for pastors is that that better vision comes through the preaching of the gospel.
Yeah.
It comes through a knowledge of who God is, that he is the Lord of the world and not us, that his purposes matter more than ours. It comes to a knowledge of ourselves, that we are meant to be limited and dependent, that our time on earth is very short. It comes to a knowledge of the Lord Jesus, that he is the one who deserves all our praise and devotion and attention, not the things of this world. It comes to the knowledge of what creation is. Creation is not raw material for use for our purposes. It is an arena of God's glory. And it comes to a knowledge of the time that we live in, that we are living in the time before the new creation. We are not going to fix all our problems with technology, no matter what anybody says. We are not going to usher in a beautiful new redeemed world through anything we do. Christ is going to do that when he returns. And so we can live well for the Lord now and make the most of our time in the here and now, but we're not going to fix the world with technology. And so we can rely on Christ and wait for his coming and not be too fussed that we're not taking every opportunity that right in front of us right now, because we can enjoy our limitations. And so I think a rich preaching of scripture will form our hearts and minds in those areas. But I think it is helpful to raise questions like this. I've done seminars on this topic at different churches and within our own church. I've taught the youth group through some of this stuff. And all I'm wanting to do is to give a bit of the picture of what the Bible has to say about technology in the world and sort of say, well, look, you need to go and ask the questions of your own, of yourself. I'm not going to say to my church, no one in this church should have a smartphone or be on social media because we're not a cult. You know, it's just the wrong approach. But I am going to say, look, if we really want to follow the Lord in every area of life, that means we've got to follow the Lord in every area of life.
Yeah.
And to be okay with being weird. When the people in Ephesus burnt all their magic scrolls, there was a riot because it was actually awful for the economy, because so many Christians were turning their back on idolatry. You just think, what does it look like for us as Christians to wholeheartedly say we are going to live for Jesus and not buy into the idolatry of the world, which is so tied up with mastery and control, with technology, with entertainment, with distraction, with diversion? What would it look like to live such a different life that our neighbours thought we were insane? I think that's a helpful question to ask of ourselves.
Do you think sometimes we need to join the dots a bit more for people without binding their conscience? I wonder if preaching's a bit binary. It's either so general that it doesn't really land for people, or it's so specific that actually it does end up binding people's conscience and just turns into a kind of legalism. So here's an example. I was just reading Psalm 19 the other day. You might think about, you know, something to do with the glory of the world that God has created. And you could tell a little story in a sermon, couldn't you? And I'll go northern with my illustration. So next time you're driving up the M6 up past Lancaster and you drive into the lakes, you know, just why don't just switch off the stereo and just look at the landscape, which is quite spectacular as you drive up that motorway, and just think, isn't this wonderful? Someone could, you know, just read a verse out from, you know, you don't need to say to people, you must do this when you drive up the M6.
That's right.
But by giving illustrations like that, perhaps worked examples, we do help people begin to see how to apply the word to their lives, don't we?
I think that's right. I think that's that is a helpful thought. And certainly we do need to join the dots a little bit in terms of the relevance of what we're preaching to the practicality of life. I think in our church, one of the things that we've been doing in recent years, and again, this isn't the only way to do it, but one of the things we've been doing is we've changed the focus of our small group ministry. So our small groups now, their usual diet is not a separate Bible study on something different. It's a reflection and a sort of meditation on the sermon and the passage we've just heard. And I think that's the kind of opportunity where you can sort of say in that group or in a follow-up conversation, so what would it look like for you to put that sermon into practice on Monday morning at work, or when you're parenting your child, or with your and your devices at home? Let's map some of those things out. Let's have those kind of conversations. And you're not telling people what to do, but raising the kind of questions where you say, okay, what do you think about that? Have we really thought this through from a Christian perspective? Or are we just doing what everyone else does because it's easy?
And just as an aside on that, we do the same thing, by the way. One of the things I've discovered is you do need to train your small group leaders slightly differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think lots of churches I know are sort of moving towards that model, which I think is a good one. But actually, if you've trained your small group leaders to be inductive Bible study leaders, it's a slightly different set of skills to be able to lead them through the work of application and, you know, not binding one another, all that kind of thing. So I mean, just as an aside, I think you're listening to
and,
this.
And the key thing for the small group leaders, I think, is that they are doing the work of applying the sermon to their own hearts. That's true of all of us. That's the most important thing that we can do to lead other people, and I said this before, is to be active, receptive hearers of the word who are prepared to change and humble enough to say, as a result of that, I really do need to change some things in my life.
Yeah. Nathan, we've got some just under 5 minutes left. Can we have a quick word thinking about parents?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the hardest things in church life is shepherding parents.
Yeah.
We obviously do have an influence on children for youth groups and children sitting in services and what have you. But I think especially we want to help parents in this area. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of parents are anxious, mm-hmm. not so much for themselves, but for their children. They hear what their children are being exposed to. They hear how social media especially is being used amongst teens and get very, very anxious about that. And in some ways, rightfully so, you know, in terms of some of the horror stories I think you hear about. What could we say to parents about their parenting when it comes to technology and their children and what they're exposed to?
Yeah, I think absolute number one is model what a good use of technology to your children. If it doesn't matter how while you speak to your children, if you're on your phone all the time when that you're with them, you're teaching them how to live.
Yes.
They and so
restrict your hours on the phone. Hang on. Yes, restrict your hours on the phone.
That's right.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. What our children, you know, that wonderful passage in Deuteronomy about talk about things of the Lord when you sit at home, when you're walking, when you're walking in the road. You can't do that if you're on your phone. We need to and I'm saying this to myself more than anybody else. We need to give our children time and attention and unhurried space. I know that's very difficult for some parents with working hours and all the rest of it. And please, if you're listening to this, don't feel I'm not trying to make anyone feel guilty. At the same time, that ought to be the goal, oughtn't it? Just to sort of say, is there anything I can do just to increase the amount of unhurried time I might have with my kids? And to ask the question, what kind of relationship with technology are they seeing me have? And so what are they going to learn from that? And I guess the other thing to remember is that you're the parent, and so you can say no. You can say no to your kids, and there is a tremendous amount of pressure, I think, culturally, for parents to give their children what all the other children have. But it is interesting. There's been a bit of a backlash recently, hasn't there, in the wider world, where parents are now getting together and forming collectives who are saying, right, none of us are going to give smartphones to our kids in primary school, I think it was. And so I think there is this general sense that if no one else had a smartphone, no one would be buying a smartphone for their kids. Yeah. But there's a sort of a keeping up with the Joneses thing. Now, I'm not going to tell anybody how to live their lives. And you've got to make your own decisions. And there's wisdom in lots of different approaches. We're not buying smartphones for our kids. None of them have it. Our 13-year-old has an Alcatel, I think, rather than a Nokia, brick phone, which means that he can text his friends and that he can give us a ring if he needs a lift. I don't think at the age of 13 he needs more than that. And when I was 13, anything more than that would not have been helpful for me.
No, I had a phone card when I was 13, I think.
Well, I had 20p in my pocket. That's what we've told our kids. This is 20p in your pocket.
And just, I mean, you said a bit earlier on about how, you know, Christians need to learn to be weird.
Yeah.
So putting that in a parenting context, actually, we've got to teach our children it's okay to be weird.
Absolutely.
So, or to be a bit more theological about it, we've got to teach them to be in the world but not of it.
Yeah, so we've got to teach them that the reason that they're weird is not because Christianity is weird, because Christianity is sane and the world is weird. We had a very helpful and fruitful preach through the book of 1 Peter before Christmas this year, and it was just wonderful.
It's just so relevant, isn't it, for today?
To see the beauty of walking in the ways of Christ, knowing that he was weird and hated and despised, and yet he was honoured by his Father, and he's left us a good path to follow. It's a path of suffering, it's a path of opposition and persecution, but there's no more blessed way to walk than in the footsteps of Christ.
Yeah. Nathan, that seems to be an entirely appropriate place to finish. Thank you so much. I found it a real help, and I hope others who are listening have too. If you've enjoyed the podcast, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Truth Social and Snapchat and WhatsApp and Instagram. We're not on all those things. Don't mind. I've just got to get my point in at the end. Do leave a review, because it just helps people find us. Thanks very much for joining us. Nathan, you've blessed us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bless you in your ministry up there at Mornings and in family life too. And we look forward to catching up with you all soon. Thanks.
Thank you.